Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're wrestling with a topic that is, I think, central to the future of communication. True digital freedom.
It really is.
I mean, in an era that's just dominated by these huge platforms that control content, monetize our attention, well, sometimes just pull the plug on dissent. Where do you turn for absolute privacy, for the freedom to publish whatever you choose?
That is the critical question. And for you, our mission today is to give you a really accessible entry point into a technological solution that's been working on this since basically the turn of the millennium. We're talking about Hyphenet.
Hyphenet, right, which used to be known as Freenet.
Yeah.
It's a network that has evolved, for sure, but its core mission
has
remained the same. Censorship resistance.
Well, absolutely.
So we've pulled together a stack of sources detailing its structure. It's a robust peer-to-peer network. And its foundational engine, the Freenet reference daemon, which everyone just calls Fred.
And we're not just, you know, listing features today. We want to unpack the actual technological backbone of this thing, of true decentralized data storage. We're going to connect the dots between, say, complex encryption and the tangible reality of speaking your mind without a central gatekeeper.
Exactly. So you can walk away understanding the mechanics of digital freedom.
That's the goal.
Before we dive in, though, a quick word of thanks to our sponsor. This deep dive into securing digital information is supported by SafeServer. They handle hosting and assist with digital transformation, and they're instrumental in helping innovators and people who value privacy.
They really are. You can find more information and support their mission at www.safeserver.de.
Okay, so let's start with the big one, the defining characteristic of Hyphenet.
Right. So you have to forget typical websites and servers for a moment. Hyphenet is, at its core, a peer-to-peer network. It's dedicated to censorship-resistant and privacy-respecting publishing and communication.
And that structural difference is what makes it all work.
Right.
When we say Hyphenet, we're talking about software that creates a, what's the phrase? A distributed, encrypted, decentralized data store. That's a bit of a mouthful.
It is. But let's break down what that really implies.
Yeah.
If you host a traditional website, your data lives in one place. One physical location, probably controlled by a giant corporation, that makes it a single point of failure.
Super easy to attack, easy to censor, or just seize with a legal order.
Exactly. Hyphenet works completely differently.
Okay, so how does that work in practice? Could you give us maybe an analogy for someone new to this?
Yeah, of course. Imagine you have a book, a really sensitive book you want to publish freely.
Right.
Instead of putting that entire book on one single bookshelf in your house, that's your centralized server.
A single point of failure.
Exactly. You take the book, you break it down into thousands of tiny encrypted fragments, like individual sentences, but scrambled. And then you scatter those fragments randomly across thousands of unmarked private lockers all over the world.
So these lockers are the other users on the network, the nodes.
Precisely. And so even if some, you know, adversarial government or corporation finds one locker, all they have is a single, encrypted, totally meaningless piece of data. They can't piece the full document together. They can't even tell what it's about.
And that's because the data is randomized and stored redundantly across all these countless nodes.
Yeah. For censorship to work, an attacker would need to find and seize a huge number of random nodes all over the globe all at once and decrypt the data without the keys. It's practically impossible.
And that right there, that really shows you why this was designed with such, you know, urgency. Our sources mentioned that quote from Mike Godwin of the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Oh, yeah, the one about freedom of the press.
Right. He talked about worrying that a child might one day ask, "Daddy, where were you when they took freedom of the press away from the internet?"
And that sentiment, I think, really drives Hyphenet's existence. It's not just a tech curiosity. It's an ideological commitment.
And the engine that powers all of this, the machine that handles the data scattering, the encryption, the routing, that's Fred.
Yes, Fred, which stands for Freenet Reference Daemon. It's the open source software that turns your computer into one of those anonymous global lockers. It does all the heavy lifting.
Let's talk about Fred's technical DNA for a second.
Mm.
The sources say it's mostly written in Java-like, 87.5%, which some people might find surprising for a security-focused project. Why Java?
That's a great question. You know, people often think of decentralized networks and they assume these hyper-optimized languages like C++ free. And Java has this reputation for being a bit more resource intensive.
Right.
But for a project that needs extreme resilience and has to run everywhere on every kind of computer, Java is actually a huge strategic advantage.
Resilience.
Well, Java is famous for its cross-platform compatibility, Windows, Linux, Mac OS. it just runs reliably everywhere. For a decentralized network that needs thousands of nodes running on all sorts of different hardware, stability is way more important than a few milliseconds of speed.
So it's a trade-off. You sacrifice a tiny bit of speed for years of platform stability.
You've got it. The longevity of the network is the priority.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, so moving to functionality. If Fred is just this secure, stable data store, what does the user actually do with it? What can you build on top of this foundation?
Right. So Fred provides the pipes, the foundation, but the applications are what you see and interact with. Developers have built layers on top of Fred that look and feel like familiar internet tools.
But with those critical privacy upgrades.
Exactly. We're talking about more than just anonymous file sharing.
Like what specifically?
Well, the network supports forums and chat applications. You can host your own websites or blogs. There's decentralized microblogging, sort of like a Twitter where no company can ban your account.
Interesting.
And then you have media sharing, from simple files all the way to video on demand streaming, and even decentralized version tracking for software projects.
Wow. So the implication there is huge. It means you can build a community, run a blog, share files, all without needing a big tech company or worrying about government seizure.
The central authority is just gone.
Yeah.
It fundamentally changes the power dynamic. The users hold the power.
Okay, let's drill down into what I think is the ultimate layer of privacy protection here. This is the aha moment for anyone learning about this system. Hyphenet gives you two different ways to connect.
And this is really the key innovation in its architecture. When you install it, you face this strategic choice about your level of security.
Option one is the default, the easy start. The global opennet.
Right. That's designed for simplicity.
Right.
You join the general global network, and Fred finds anonymous nodes for you to connect to. You still get a solid level of security. Your data is encrypted and routed through multiple hops.
Wow.
But since you're connecting to unknown public nodes, someone trying to map the whole network might be able to observe that there's a Hyphenet connection at your location. They still can't see what you're accessing, but they can see you're connected.
Okay. But then there's option two, which is the platinum standard of privacy, the friend-to-friend network, or F2F.
And the F2F model is exactly what it sounds like. You only connect your Hyphenet node directly to nodes run by people you personally know and trust, your real-world friends.
So you're building a private decentralized web that's totally separate from the global opennet.
Completely separate.
But if my network is only made of trusted connections, doesn't that make it hard to find content? I mean, are we trading usability for maximum security here?
That is the essential trade-off, and it's a really important friction point to acknowledge. Yes, finding content can be slower, you're relying on your friends' networks to pass requests along, but the security gain is just incomparable.
Why is that incomparable?
Because the network that results from this is completely invisible to any outside surveillance. An attacker can't map its structure because they're not part of the trusted circle.
To them, it just looks like I'm communicating with my friend. They can't confirm that my friend is also relaying data deeper into this hidden web.
You got it. It's designed to defeat statistical analysis by leveraging pre-existing social trust.
That resilience is astounding. But what about the ultimate stress test? What if there's a regional internet shutdown? The country's cut off from the world. How do I maintain contact then?
This is where the dedication to censorship resistance gets truly fascinating. For this situation, you need the ShoeShot plugin.
The ShoeShot plugin.
It enables what's lovingly called a sneaker net.
A sneaker net? I love that name. So it suggests physical effort. How does it work when the wires are literally cut?
It's brilliant. The ShoeShot plugin creates these encrypted connection data packages. Instead of relying on the internet, you take those encrypted packages.
And put them on a USB stick or something.
Exactly. A USB drive, a portable hard drive. You could even print out QR codes. And you rely on a human courier, a friend, traveling to physically sneak that data past the censorship checkpoint.
Wow.
Once the data reaches the destination node, it can rebuild the F2F connection, keeping the network alive even if the national infrastructure is totally disabled.
That's next level. They're not just planning for digital eavesdropping, but for full state-level infrastructure seizure.
It shifts the attack vector from technology to logistics. You have to physically stop the couriers.
Let's shift gears a bit and look at the project itself. It's been running for 2 decades. Is this a mature project or just a handful of enthusiasts?
Oh, it's robust and mature. Looking at the repository, we see 1.1 thousand stars and 224 forks. And that high number of forks tells you that a lot of developers have been using and improving the code for a long time. The sources list 83 current contributors.
So a healthy, active core team.
Very much so. And when you're dealing with security tools, trust in the development process is everything. You don't want it to be haphazard.
So what tools are they using to make sure it's professional?
They're using industry standard tools. The build process relies on the Gradle wrapper. This is a small but crucial detail. It ensures every single developer builds the software in exactly the same way, which minimizes errors that could create security flaws.
And what about installers? I mean, it needs to be easy for people to use.
Of course. They maintain specialized installer repositories for Windows, GNU Linux, and macOS. They've made the entry point for the user as smooth as possible.
And one detail in the sources about the Windows installer stood out to me as a huge sign of trust. The code signing.
Yes. Code signing is what verifies that the software is authentic, that it hasn't been tampered with.
Right. It prevents man-in-the-middle attacks. But the sources say they use free code signing from a service called signpath.io. Why is that so telling?
Well, commercial code signing costs a lot and requires extensive identity verification, know your customer, or KYC.
Which is the exact opposite of what a privacy project wants.
Exactly. For a decentralized project, asking contributors to submit personal ID to a central authority just defeats the entire purpose. By using services like signpath.io, they can confirm the integrity of the build process without revealing the developer's identities. It's an ethical and practical necessity.
So that wraps up a pretty comprehensive look at Hyphenate and Fred. We've gone from the philosophy all the way down to the technical details.
And the core takeaway, I think, remains so powerful. Hyphenate provides a functioning, time-tested example of how peer-to-peer tech can make communication fundamentally resistant to censorship and fundamentally protect privacy.
It really moves the power away from those centralized choke points and back to the user.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate layer of security depends on a human choice. The F2F network, the most secure form, relies entirely on a friend-to-friend model built on real-world trust. So here's the final thought for you to mull over. What does this tell us about the future necessity of strengthening our actual interpersonal relationships as the real foundation for our digital freedom?
The tool is there, but the network's strength is determined by your social commitment. That's the legacy of Hyphenate.
A deeply compelling thought. This deep dive was made possible by SafeServer. If you're looking for secure hosting or need help with your own digital transformation, please check them out at www.tafeserver.de.
Thank you for joining us as we uncovered the layers of Hyphenate. We really encourage you to dig into the sources yourself and keep building your understanding of these truly resilient networks.
We'll see you on the next Deep Dive.